This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Brock and Salk, we are down at Safeco Field today. What a place to be, man. This is the center of Seattle right now. Right? I mean, this is the center of the sports universe here in Seattle right now, with the Mariners winning on the clip that they are, 43-24, on the verge of a sweep today over the Angels, and then four start with the Red Sox tomorrow, expecting a ton of people here over the weekend. I know I'm bringing, my parents are coming in. I get to bring my parents to the game on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this.
Well, it'll be the center of the baseball.
The Magic Dragons will say, welcome to the new age.
It'll be the center of the baseball world with the Red Sox coming in. Mariners win today. You're talking about the two.
We'll get some notice.
Winningest teams going in baseball right
now. Get some eyeballs.
Yeah, there will be a few.
Along with the Yankees, obviously. But get some eyeballs. People might actually notice the Mariners exist. I mean, we were watching, what's the name of the show? The Mike Greenberg Show?
Get Up.
And they actually, oh my God, look, they got Mariners Angels on the screen. Look at that. Oh no, it's just about Mike Trout. Oh, no, it's just about how Trout has four home runs in 2 days. They're not actually talking about the Mariners. At the end, they gave, like, oh, yeah, they got some guy named Haniga or something. Move on. It's not a big deal.
Seguero?
We saw, Lydia, what maybe, it's not early, but a third of the way through the year, our first real candidate for defensive play of the year for the Mariners, don't you think? And we've seen some nice plays, but I thought last night what we saw with Valbuena not hustling out of the box, Mitch Haniger in right field, Gene Segura running over for the tag, I would say this is the early and best candidate for play of the year.
Valbuena chugging for second base. He stuttered for a second. Here comes the throw. The tag, Segura behind the back, and it gets Valbuena on the ankle. Mitch Haniger doing it all tonight. A couple of home runs and an absolute laser beam from right field in the corner where nobody could see him.
It's so cool getting a chance to do the show from here today, because you can really look out, Brock, and see where he threw it from, almost. You can't quite see all the way into that corner.
Yeah.
Because of the way the seats are, but right. I can see where the foul pole is, and now I know that it's like another 5 or 6 feet that he went far into foul territory there, and I can see where second base is.
Yeah.
That's a really long
Should
throw.
Should the three of us try that post-show? Like, there's a little time before they play.
Huh.
Should we, like, skip the ball off, like, the three of us and try to, you know, see where...
Try to throw it from where he threw it just to second base?
Halfway.
How much would your arm hurt if you tried to make that throw?
It would probably rip the tendon to my elbow.
Yes.
243 feet.
Brock Heward will be joining Shohei Ohtani and getting Tommy John surgery.
And Rick Riz and Dave Sims and the rest of the Mariners broadcast crew.
True.
Who have been nicked up this year. Yeah, it's 243 feet. What a cool feature, man. Root has just continued to step up their game. I've loved some of their analytics they brought to the table.
Really?
I've loved the probability, like, this catch is made, this play is made. I love that art.
I just liked Dan Wilson and Mike Blowers discussing bats yesterday.
Well, that was cool too.
I thought that was fun.
Yeah, they kind of got the whole spectrum covered. But if you want to see, like, you know, we call this in our TV truck on the football side, we call it, like, art, right? So you got somebody back there whose job it is, you know, to circle that and show the highlight and show the ball flight and everything else. 243 feet on the dot to Gene Segura, and that wasn't even maybe the highlight of the play. It was the fact that Gene Segura could feel. That was total and complete instinct, man. It was feel for where Valbuena was to be able to come blindly right to that spot and nail him at the base.
That was amazing. And then Gene does his little dance afterwards, which was great. I didn't realize it on the first viewing, but when you see, it's been out on the internet a lot, the shot really from behind right field looking down at Haniger, you see how quickly he transfers the ball from getting it to his glove and right into his hand. That without that, the play doesn't get made. But let's also be clear. That play doesn't get made if Valbuena hustles out of the box. And I don't mind guys pimping their home runs, trust me. I love the personality in baseball. I got no problems with Tony Bautista in the playoffs a couple of years ago doing what he did. I got no problems with any of that. Jose Bautista, excuse me. But you can't pimp what might be a double. I mean, he hits a line drive down the right field line just past the first baseman and tosses his bat as if he's just hit it 400 feet.
I mean, Astros rant guy may have gone down for the count. I mean, if that was against the Astros, I think he would have just lost his utter mind. He's pipping it. He's watching it. Haniger, I don't know. You think Haniger could see him do that? as he was making his way into the corner. Do you think Haniger had the time or the opportunity? Maybe not. Maybe it is all instant reaction. And I love this, too, from Mitch. Cut number 21, Howdy and Lydia. You know, Mitch Haniger, not satisfied, not ever satisfied, not ever going to shine any of the glory on him. This is classic Mitch Haniger.
Ball sit down the line in the corner. I always know I have a chance if it's not, you know, a guy who can really turn it on and run. And luckily, I just got a really good bounce off the bottom of the wall. I was hoping it would hit that cement piece at the bottom, and it bounced right up to me. So just definitely need to get the throw a little lower, but it worked out good.
Yeah, you got to get the throw a little lower. I mean, if you're going to throw 243 feet, you really need to be within 2 feet of the bag, not 3 or 4 feet of the bag. Maybe next time you could work a little harder on that play, Mitch. Maybe come out for some early fielding work in right field and practice how to do that play right, don't you think?
But that's totally genuine, too. Isn't that great? That's not a Heward humble brag. Right? Oh, you know what?
He wants it to be lower.
Yes. And that's totally genuine. And Segura on the other end for his part, cut number 22.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's the only chance that I make the tie quicker.
Yeah, it's the only chance he had. Thank you, Gene. That was to the point.
Very succinct.
That was it.
He's not messing
It's not
around.
Easy being a hitting machine, Brock. No, you got to spend that time working on your hitting, not talking about a play you made in the field.
But the play is only, one part of it. You know, I thought, Mike, the whole total picture of watching, and I asked you before the show, what if one of the Mariners had done that?
Valbuena did?
Yeah. What if one of the Mariners just tried to pimp a double and bat flip a double and get thrown out at second? What's the reaction in that clubhouse?
I would hope that all the other 24 guys would look at him and say, Valbuena. Valbuena, Valbuena, Valbuena. First of all, I can't imagine that happening to the Mariners. I honestly can't. There's not a player on this team that I can imagine.
Valbuena, Segura. Valbuena, Valbuena.
Just give him back to the Mets, man. I can't imagine anybody really doing that. You know, Segura's got a little flair to his game at times and makes base running mistakes. So, obviously he's had some boneheaded plays.
Yes.
But I can't see him tossing his bat. Like, there aren't that many guys in the game who do stuff like that. And by the way, we've gotten a chance to see a few of them in the last week. I mean, you saw Carlos Gomez in Tampa, and now you're seeing Luis Valbuena in Anaheim. Those are two guys who are willing to play the game that way. Mm-hmm. And while they can be entertaining to watch because there's always sort of something going on with them, I don't think those guys are winners.
Yeah,
do you?
Go ahead, Lydia.
I was going to say, if we're talking about juxtaposing these two teams and things that stood out, it's along those same lines. But the Angels have the greatest player in baseball right now, and watching him hit two home runs in both these games has been absolutely impressive, yet they've lost both those two games. The Mariners on the other side could have any one player, well, not anyone, but any like multiple players hitting two home runs on those nights, and then they're going on to win. So I think that's an interesting comparison of the two, because as impressive as Mike Trout's stats are, they don't translate into a team, necessarily into a team winning thing. But the Mariners, to me, are so impressive because it's like on any one night, one person can step up and be the hero.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's the sum of all of the parts and not just the one unbelievable superstar. And this may be a reach.
But it's also that they don't have one guy who's going to step down and be the GOAT. And that's not to say they won't have players who make mistakes. They will. They will have players who make errors. There will be nights, when we look at it and go, it's really too bad the bullpen gave it up again, or it's really too bad the starting pitcher, the one game Mike Leake just didn't have it. No. I mean, there are going to be players who are responsible for losses because they don't play well.
Yep.
But I don't see it happening because they don't run hard out of the box, pimp their single down the line, and then end up getting thrown out at second base because of it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't think it's because they tear a team apart like Carlos Gomez taking a fly ball away from somebody else and then giving him attitude about it in right field.
Right.
It's D. Gordon joking around with Ryan Healy about it, and they're loving each other and having a good time, as opposed to psychopath Carlos Gomez out there.
Yeah.
Brock, those are major differences that we've seen just in the last couple of weeks here, in the last few games with the Mariners. And I'll keep giving a lot of the credit to Scott Servais for the culture he's built, but it also goes to the 25 guys who sit down in that dugout and hold each other accountable to it.
Yeah, earmuffs, Lydia, or young kids out there. But, in our locker rooms, we used to call them, and I still hear, teammates and coaches and whatever in the different sports. Unfortunately, that guy's just a turd. And I know that's a word that I don't use a lot, but that's what's used. That's some of the vernacular that's used in sport. Like, that guy's just, he's going to flush your team down the toilet. Like, it's just not, and we're not going to bring that in. You know, it'll be a college football program. They'll say, yeah, just that guy. That's, and we don't have to do it. You know, back in the day we did when we built the program, maybe we took some risks on guys that just not have character, that were first guys. And we're just not going to do it because we're not going to flush the goodwill that we have with this team, right? We're just not going to do it to have a guy that's more, that cares more about his deal than he does everybody else.
What does Ian Kinsler think of that last night? I mean, Ian Kinsler, who played in the WBC, which was so much fun, and all the back and forth and the joy and expression that was being used in that. And he complained about it.
Well, here's what
I would love to know. What is he thinking when he's sitting out there on the bench and Valbuena does that?
Here's what I would love to know. As you went through the litany of different reasons to give Scott an extension and some of the praise that is worthy of being heaped on him right now, no doubt about it, and why you get guys together and why you have them go out to dinner and why you have them present and why you do that is, Mike, so in a situation like that last night, you hope you have enough relationship. You can go up to him and go, dude, no, absolutely not. That is not, we are not going to do that, man. Not now, not against this Red Hot Mariners team.
I'm curious if Mike Trout or somebody in that team does. Yeah. Look, that Angels lineup doesn't look the same right now. You take Ohtani out of it, you take Cole Calhoun out of it, and you take Andrelton Simmons out of it, and they're just not the same team. And so, you kind of expect the Mariners to beat this team up a little bit. Mike Trout is really one of their only threats. But is Trout the guy who says that stuff? He's so boring and so droll. I mean, maybe he does, and we don't get to see that side of him. But, I mean, I know Nelson Cruz will, and we've heard some of the stories over the last few years behind the scenes of Nelson grabbing somebody and saying, hey, enough is enough. Cut it out. That's not the way we behave.
Yep.
And it sure is helpful when you're Nelson Cruz's size. You can do those things, and people take you a little bit more seriously, as Tom Wassel's always saying.
Man, how is Mike Trout 239 pounds?
It's all on his neck.
Man.
Oh, come on. Yeah. All right. It's not fair. Now you're taking shots at his neck.
I said that in a positive manner.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all like linebacker neck.
That dude is.
No, it's not fat neck.
No,
it's linebacker neck.
That guy is jacked. Why,
how does a guy go from 210 pounds to almost 240 pounds in just a few years? Jeez, I don't know.
Yeah.
How does a guy do that? I can't even think of a way a professional athlete has ever gained 30 pounds of raw muscle. I mean, it's never happened before. Let me see. What ways could somebody go?
Someone was telling me yesterday, actually. No, someone was telling me yesterday, and maybe someone can verify this on the text toy, that he was a guy that in high school started taking testosterone from a medicinal standpoint. That it was a legit. It wasn't like, someone was trying to tell me that this morning.
So,
text toy. I'm going to rely on the text toy right here.
What are you even saying,
Brock? Did you just say that with a straight face?
I'm asking for the text toy.
Brock,
we've all got our different medical conditions.
Stop looking out the window and look at me.
No, I'm not looking at you.
Mike, say this out loud.
Yes.
Mike Trout.
Yes.
Repeat after me, like at a wedding. Mike Trout. Had a medical condition.
Had a medical condition.
That caused him.
That caused him.
To take testosterone. You can't say that with a straight face.
Why are you doing this?
Stop.
Text toy, help me out. If you got an Angels fan out there listening that is so mad at us right now,
stop.
That can give us the scientific.
He had
background.
An unfortunate condition. It turned out he was only 6'2".
He only weighed 210 pounds and somehow had to get to
240. As a 16-year-old at 6'1", 190 pounds, he realized he had a problem. And that's when he got testosterone.
Oh, I am not reporting.
We need one of these,
I am speculating.
We need
on,
one of these
on
old, one of these commercials you see all the time on TV where it's like some drawing of a rock that needs like psychological help, and it's poor high school Mike Trout wobbling his way to work or to school every day because it's so miserable not being as jacked as he wants to be, so he needs to take testosterone. What are you talking about? That can't be true.
I am speculating on the information that came from a good source, but I'm not reporting on it. So we can, and I know we're going to get to some of that in 15 minutes too. Was that, by the way, last thing on that play?
How does a guy ever get to 240?
Hold on.
Dave Sims cracking me up last night.
Last thing, that play yesterday, where does that rank in the 10 years of watching defensive
for
plays?
Us? All right. So we've got to be clear then, because immediately I saw a text, 710-710 powered by Coors Light. And we can always have the phone lines open. If you guys want to jump into this, you don't have to wait for an invitation. Jump right in. 206-421-3776, whenever you want to comment on whatever it is we're talking about. We love you guys. We want you to be a part of this thing. 206-421-3776. Hey, even if you want to support Brock that Mike Trout needed to take testosterone when he was in high school. It's preposterous.
Brock, well, you are so gullible. How are you this gullible?
Okay, you just wait. You just wait when the facts come out here.
Brock, right? Do you know how they actually open and close this roof?
How do they do
They've
it?
Got a little hamster in a wheel right behind the right field foul pole.
I thought
they,
I saw
little,
that
They put
the
a little cheese
day.
And the hamster just starts running. And the next thing you know, they close the roof.
I knew that was the case.
All right, so let's be clear, because I saw a text come in that said, hey, was this better than Ichiro's throw, the Star Wars throw? And I would say definitively it was not. That is a legendary play that will live in most people's minds forever. I lived 3,000 miles. Yes, that's not true. That was 01. I was living in L.A. But I was no way paying attention to the Mariners in 2001. Mm-hmm. And that throw is deeply embedded into my brain long before I ever moved or thought about coming to Seattle.
I don't think that throw ever got above 5 feet.
It's one of the most impressive throws I've ever seen.
Yes.
It was so low to the ground. It was so, and that's from right field to third base. And plus, it just has Terrence Long's expression when he gets there of like, what in the world just happened?
Yeah.
So, no, it is not as good as the Ichiro throw.
But you add in the tag. I mean, Kyle just had to catch, or that wasn't Kyle back then. What, Seager on third base? Whoever it was, just had to put the tag down. You combine
it was 2001. It was not Kyle.
It was not Kyle. You combine Mitch's throw with the tag. I mean, with that, just instantaneous. There was one spot he couldn't see it. That is a blind tag back over. I mean, that was unless in the Blowers and the baseball guys.
That's a really cool play.
That was almost as
impressive. David Bell, by the way.
Yeah, that makes
David
sense.
Bell.
When I think about the best plays we've seen, one of the first ones that comes to my mind was the play that Leonis Martin made last year. To win the game in center field, maybe it was 2 years ago, caught the ball and then crashed into center field fence to end the game. That was 2 years ago. That was a great one. I mean, look, we watched Franklin Gutierrez, his rookie or his first year here, where he caught everything in the air, and I can think of two or three off the top of my head. We've seen some really great plays. I mean, we saw Ben Gamel topple into the stands. We've seen Heredia steal a couple of home runs just this year. I mean, there have been some. Yeah. There have been a lot of great plays. This was my favorite I've seen so far this year. But I'm not sure I'm willing to say it was like the number one in our tenure here.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think it was just on the last homestand.
How about the Kyle Seager play to win the game against the Angels 2 years ago? I mean, that's going to be right there. That's one of the and the fact that if he doesn't complete it, they lose the game because Trout's coming around from second.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been some really spectacular plays. But last night was so cool and made even better by the fact that Valbuena is such a chump.
Yes.
Like, that makes it so much better that he is out there pimping a single. That makes it so much more fun.
Yeah, the degree of difficulty on that. All of those things had to be thrown into it. He had to make a boneheaded decision. That bounce had to be just right. Mitch's transfer had to be instantaneous. That tag had to be blind into one spot. You put it all together, it was, man, it was one marvelous
play.
You
want to grab a caller, too? We got some people. You want to grab Phil, who's in North Bend? What's up, Phil?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, what's up, Philly Phil?
Ooh, this can play right
to
salt.
I just wanted to ask you guys, when you talk to Scott Servais, why are we pitching the ball to Mike Trout? Why don't they just put him on?
Well, let's answer it first together, Phil, because we got this question a lot. This is on our list of things to talk about today. We haven't gotten to it yet. So the first time, it was early in the game. I think you could make an argument that you should put him on even with nobody on base early in the game. But, you know, they'd held him to a single earlier. You're trying to get him out. You did see Leek strike him out the third time. So, you know, I think there was I could at least defend it, although I would have had no problems putting him on early in the game. The one people are talking about is the second home run he hit yesterday. He had walked Kinsler. Cook was in. He had walked Kinsler, who had then gotten down to second base on a stolen base. And you would have been walking Trout to pitch to Upton with two outs, but with now the tying run at the plate. And I don't think you can walk the tying run to the plate intentionally.
You think that was a decision, though?
Yes.
Do you think there's a, you know, some conversation, you know, as Cookies gets to 3-0 and that likelihood's happening, okay, and you know who's
it was a 2-2 pitch.
Yeah. No, to Trout. But
it was a 2-2 pitch.
Kinsler had gotten to 3-0. Cook had two outs. He got to 3-0, unfortunately. He belted back to 3-2. He eventually
then he
walks Kinsler.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm wondering at that
point. It's definitely not going to be a conversation with Kinsler at first base, right? You're not going to move Kinsler to second. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Now he gets to second base on a stolen bag.
Yes.
I don't think it's even still a, I don't even think it's a debate. I mean, I think you just you understand that even a home run, which is the worst case scenario,
you're still ahead.
You're still ahead.
Yeah.
So you put him on first. You pitch to him. Hope you can get him out. If you happen to walk him, so be it. But you got to give him a chance to get him out. And unfortunately, the problem here is not that Scott Servais made a bad decision. It's that Ryan Cook can't give him that pitch on 2-2.
Cookie.
You got to throw a ball that is 2 feet outside the zone, and he knew it.
Did he? What did he yell?
He wasn't yelling at the bench, I'll tell you that much. He wasn't yelling, you should have walked him. He's yelling, put that ball 2 feet out of the zone.
He didn't yell fire, fire, too?
He got that fire, fire. No, I don't think we can repeat what he was yelling on the mound.
I don't think so.
He was yelling, I think, before that ball even got to Trout.
Okay, let's quantify this for Phil and some others, though, in your baseball book. If pitching to Diaz in a non-save situation is 100-0.
Yes.
Right, when we've gotten into those moments, it's 100-0. And for Scott, it is 2.
Yeah.
Okay, he would say, I want my best pitcher in those situations.
Diaz leveraging him at home in the ninth inning tied.
Yes.
Yes. That's 100-0.
That's 100-0 in your mind. Yesterday, that decision, once Kinsler gets to second base,
is 90-10.
Still 90-10.
Or 85-50. I mean, like, I can understand the argument the other way, but I don't see why you would bring that. It's not like Upton's a bad hitter. By the way, he doubled in that at bat, and you still would have had two guys score.
Yep.
I mean, Trout scoring on that double, especially with two outs, so...
Yeah.
I don't know that it's any different, to be honest with you. It doesn't work out any differently.
Yes, and I think also in that moment.
And now they're rallying. I don't know. I wouldn't do that.
Does this also play a little bit to what you talked about earlier of just empowering players?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cookie gave it up the night before to him, but in that moment he gets two outs. You lose Kinsler. That's a bummer. You never want to walk anybody ahead of Trout, but I'm not going to just pull him there. I'm going to empower. I'm going to give him the opportunity to get him.
And the other problem with walking him on purpose early in the game is, you know, now he's stealing backs. He's 17 for 17 this year. You're essentially putting him close to second base. I do wonder whether that changes today. Now, today you got Marco Gonzalez, who holds runners and picks them off as well as anybody, and you got Mike Zunino back behind the plate.
Yep.
Are you more willing to walk Trout today with a lefty on the mounds? You're giving him a lefty on righty hitting opportunity anyway, and you've got a good chance to keep him at first.
Yeah.
Today, I think it would make more sense to walk him intentionally in general.
Yeah. No, that would be a good question for Scott.
So good, though.
And you know what? We will ask Scott. Phil, I promise you, in an hour,
yeah,
we'll ask Scott about that, and he'll want to talk baseball in that way.
Yeah. Let's grab Isaiah, who's one of our favorites in Yakima. What's up, Isaiah?
Good morning, guys.
Isaiah trying to get himself back in the top five, by the way. I see what you're doing, Isaiah. Bring it.
Well, I just have to say that first, I believe the Mariners, after sleeping today, they're going to take 3 or 4 against the Red Sox. And then my second point is, that when Trout's contract is up, he's going to come and join the Mariners because he just loves hitting home runs in Safeco Field.
Are you sure he loves hitting them at Safeco Field and not just against the Mariners?
Well, yeah, because just think about it. So Cano got suspended and all that stuff, right? We took D. Gordon, who was supposed to be a center fielder. Now he's transitioned back to his home, which is second base, and he just looks like he's been playing it since opening day. You know, Cruz is getting a little bit older. Cano does still have a bat, so you can kind of intermix them within DHing, or you could just throw Cano, if you could do it, first base to give Healy a rest. Then you have Trout in center field. You can have Heredia still. You got speed in the outfield, and you got the power, a guy who loves hitting home runs in Safeco Field, as he proved it the last 2 days. Why not? He's going to not want to. He wants to play with a winner, I'm assuming, want to win something, and I don't think the Angels are going to be doing that. It looks like
you're right that he may very well leave Anaheim after 2020, which is when his contract runs out. But if you're saying that he wants to play for a winner, I mean, you're going to prove to him that you're a winner. They haven't made the playoffs in 17 years.
It's June. The Mariners are in first place. They're a winner.
I don't know if I see him driving up I-5 to come to Seattle.
He made that decision about 2020 today.
Sometimes, as you guys know, I struggle with some of the advanced sabermetric stuff. But so can you guys tell me if this is any good? Mike Trout versus the Mariners this season is batting .636.
Yeah.
Is that pretty good?
It's not bad.
3 doubles, triple, 5 home runs.
Is that advanced metrics?
Five home runs and 22 at-bats. 5 home runs and 22 at-bats, and he's batting .636.
Well, he didn't hit a home run against Diaz yesterday. He struck him out on, 4 pitches and looked pretty darn good in the process.
Yeah.
Man,
Brock,
what a night.
The new
a lot
word,
of fun.
But doesn't really know what it means. Advanced statistics.
Obviously, that was tongue-in-cheek.
I don't think
you
so. I don't think you really knew what that
meant. Oh, really?
How come you don't know what that means?
You want to go whip? You want to go bad bip? What do you want to go? You
hey,
want to go
since,
war?
Since you're trying to figure out what words mean, Brock, maybe you can help me with 2 words that I don't think mean anything close to each other, but a former Seahawk apparently does. It's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
I want to hit on a few things here. Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. Phone line's been open as well, 206-421-3776. We're down at Safeco Field. And, of course, this hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. An hour from now, Scott Service will come sit down with us, talk about a huge game against the Angels today. How big is it? Brock will discuss here in about 5 minutes. I did want to read this because this came from Richard Sherman yesterday. And I don't think it's directed at us. I don't think we've been the only people speculating about this.
But it is, that's okay.
That's fine. I don't think it is. It didn't dawn on me. I assumed that other people have speculated on this as well.
It dawned on me it was us.
Okay. Well, it hadn't until later. I guess maybe it is us. I don't know how that would get to Richard Sherman.
I think it's us.
Really? Okay. Fair enough. You're a little bit more, arrogant than I am, I guess. I don't know how else to say it. So we were wondering whether or not Earl Thomas has been getting any advice from Richard Sherman. And by the way, it still wouldn't surprise me if he was. If Sherman's been in Earl's ear and attempting from afar to try to break up whatever has gone on in Seattle all these years. Because I think he's vindictive like that. And I think he would like to prove to the world that he's great while the Seahawks are bad. I think that's the way he views the world. I don't think I'm that different from him, by the way. I'm not being judgmental about it. I think I'm sort of the same way. I think that's how I might act in that spot. So it's not... This is not putting him down for it. But what's ridiculous is this comment to Jordan Schultz yesterday, who tweeted this out. Jordan says, I asked Richard Sherman about the speculation that he is advising Earl Thomas to hold out. Here's his response. Quote, the stupidest thing I have seen. That's a made up story by someone trying to grab headlines. I have never spoke to him about his situation. That's lazy reporting. Make up a story and hope player mentioned never shoots it down.
Mm. Interesting.
It can't be lazy reporting if it's not reporting.
Yeah.
Like, let's just be clear. It can't be. Now, I would like to apologize in advance, Brock.
And there's no headline, and there's no article, and there's no reporting being
done. It's just conversation. Now, I apologize in advance if somebody did report this and I don't know about it. I have not personally seen it reported anywhere. If it has been reported, please, somebody send it to my attention. I'd like to see the report that Richard Sherman has been advising in Earl Thomas's ear. I have not seen it, but I've definitely wondered about it. I've definitely talked about it with you because I think both you and me have looked at it and said, I wonder what makes sense here. Oh, that does.
I feel very, very strongly. I feel very, very strongly that since Richard left Seattle and he signed in the division with San Francisco, he's going to do everything in his power to beat Seattle. And did he have conversations with possible impending free agents? I absolutely would think he would. If Richard is the guy that we have known over the last 7 years in this market that is going to do whatever it takes to compete, and as Pete Carroll said, is one of the most like-minded people to him, and wakes up in the morning, and the minute his eyes open, he thinks, how am I going to beat you? I'm going to beat you today. And is also one that I think he has tried to manipulate at times the media to his advantage. Has gone so far as to say that Kerry Champion thing just doesn't go away for me. Mm. You know, and that was just a couple years ago.
Well, let's play that because this is the problem, Richard, when you don't. When you lie, essentially, when you try to make up the facts and pretend the things,
when you try to manipulate the media,
right? You lose any credibility, and it's too bad because I love Richard Sherman so much. It's so sad for me. But last year, after Richard Sherman had gone after Jim Moore, and they kind of gone back and forth, he went on with Kerry Champion on ESPN and was asked about it, and this is what he said. We don't have it? Oh, I thought we had it. I'm sorry. I thought we had that.
Yeah, well, he just...
My bad.
Yeah, no.
Fake news. Nothing happened. He never went on and said anything about
it. See, Richard's listening right now. See, you don't have any sound of that, do you?
Yeah, we do, but we have to take a moment to find it. I thought we had it.
Yes, and and once you play that card, like, it's not there. How do you know what happened? Well, no, we know in this case. I mean, this is 100%. This is a difference, Mike, between speculating and actual reporting. Speculating is, you know what? I've got some pretty good sources. I'm not going to bury any of them. I'm not going to report this as news so that I've got to back it up when, you know, an editor or a program manager or somebody says, you know, who are your sources? You know, how confident do you feel? No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to report this as news, but I'm willing to speculate because I've heard from a more than a few people that yes, Richard is going to compete and do whatever he's got to do to the betterment of San Francisco and to a little bit of the hurt of the Seattle Seahawks, who obviously hurt him in his mind, that did not extend his deal, right? That cut him and did not give him the deal or a better deal or the kind of deal that he was certainly hoping he could get. So, you know, there is a, I don't know, does a listening audience know the difference between speculating and reporting? Does it matter that they know that? Is that an enormous deal? In our field, I think it is, to have some journalistic, old Danny O'Neill, journalistic integrity to be able to say, man, I don't want to do something that totally discredits, you know, my reliability. I'm not going to do it. So is it our job to speculate on some of this? Sure. Have I heard from enough kind of voices and whispers around that that he's been an instigator, that which he is by nature? I sure have. Did he say 2 weeks ago very publicly that Earl should be the highest paid safety in the NFL? Yes, he did. Is there motive behind that? I believe there is. So, you know, I will continue to speculate that he's going to play a role and has played somewhat of a role if Earl is asked. And maybe even if Earl hasn't
asked. Fake news, bro.
Yeah, right.
Did it really happen if Richard doesn't say it happened?
That was amazing.
If Richard doesn't agree that it happened, could it have actually really not happened? I mean, that's basically what happened with Carrie Champion a couple of years ago. So anyway, that's just a few minutes on Richard Sherman. I'm not going to spend all day on it, but I thought it was, I was at the very least aggravated when I saw it yesterday. In the meantime, we're here at Safeco Field. Nothing aggravating about these Mariners right now. Last night, as joyful a game as you'll watch, I mean, kind of, it had all the elements of a back and forth affair without actually being back and forth. Wasn't it great?
Are you okay with 2 runs and 3-run wins? I don't know.
I'd like a 6-run win. Like,
oh, just stop complaining.
I would like a win where they just like knock the tar out of the baseball and they win 8-1 and we just go home happy. That would be fine.
You guys were just getting mad about your Richard Sherman situation. I was saying that about the Mariners the other night. Like, if they win by more than 1 run, did they actually really win?
Ask Richard Sherman. Lydia, you can speculate on it, but Richard won't really know the answer because he's not
sure. Well, it would be nice today because I don't think Diaz is going to be available.
No, I don't think he should be. I think it's probably time for a rest day for old Edwin.
Yep.
But how important is today's game? You look at where they're at in the standings, and they're half a game up on Houston, who I don't think is ever going to lose again. So every time you win, it's just to keep pace half a game ahead of Houston.
Yeah, and as you play the Yankees, Red Sox, they play the Orioles and the Royals and they've got a nice little stretch.
Yeah, yes. I mean, this is going to be a real easy stretch leading up to the All-Star break for them, and if they do what they're supposed to, they'll, you know, win 25-30 of those games, and they're really, really good. But you get a chance here to take the Angels down to 7.5 games behind you. You win today, they are 7.5 games back. That's a big difference from 5.5 if you lose today. So it's a 2-game swing, right? That's what happens in these games. 7.5 if you win, 5.5 if you lose.
Yeah, being on the other side of that the last couple years in some of these series where you're like, you know, my infamous words of just don't get swept, right? Of knowing the impact, Mike, of what that does, right? Of some of that dirt that it starts to throw on you and you're like, oh my gosh, in order to get back, you've got to sweep multiple people to make a substantial difference, even if you do take 2 of 3. Yeah, I think this is as much psychological. There's still nearly 100 games of baseball to play. There's going to be a lot of them played. There's going to be a lot of them played in Anaheim.
There's 100 games of baseball left to be played, but there aren't 100 to be played before the trade deadline. There's only, what, 1.5 months to go before the trade deadline, and you got to make decisions before then. And if you can win now and make them 7.5 games back with no Ohtani and no Calhoun and no Andrelton Simmons, and all of a sudden you put even more doubt into that team's mind and they start to quit on you and they're 7.5, 8 back, when you get to the deadline, they're not buyers. Right? At that point, they become sellers or nothing. I mean, but they're not going to be buyers at that point. Are you now, are you just continuing to knock out the field? If the Angels drop out of it at the deadline, there's almost no one left, right? Yeah. There's almost no one left. at that point, I mean, not that you're going to start writing a victory parade and you're still going to go after the division, but the wild card, if you can knock the Angels out of it by July, that would be, you would think, in a pretty good spot. So good stuff. Really excited for today. Good to see Marco Gonzalez on the mound. He's really been their second best pitcher so far this year, other than Paxton. So good day to have him on the mound for some day baseball. You can hear it exclusively on 710 ESPN Seattle 110 First Pitch. All right, good news, bad news, no news coming up next. Everyone was back for OTAs except for Earl Thomas, but it doesn't mean everybody was participating. Who didn't and what does it mean? It's next on Brock and Salk.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, Scott Service in 45 minutes. Brock and Salk, we are down at Safeco Field today. I hope you guys are having a good morning. It's raining. This is the one day of rain here before it gets just perfect.
Yep.
It's going to be 90 degrees next week, man. Oof. Oh, this is what I'm talking about. I am so excited.
Hey, did you find any articles written about the Richard Sherman thing?
No, they're all written about you and your radio show. What? Such a joke.
What? I'd like to see who's reporting it. If someone could send me an article that says... any of these insinuations.
This is fake news. Brock Hewitt does not have his own radio show.
That's true.
I like that is what you're most incensed about in this entire thing.
No, I'm incensed about Richard Sherman.
Oh, but they called it his radio show.
It just seems like that's the type of thing Brock would do is make sure.
Brock Hewitt's radio show.
What?
Yeah, it's a very Brock thing to do. Take ownership.
Strike that down, Your Honor. That's horrible.
At least that's what I'm speculating.
Okay.
I speculate that you're behind all of this.
Good news, bad news, no news.
What's in the news?
Good news, bad news, no news.
As promised, Earl Thomas didn't report to minicamp, but both Frank Clark and Byron Maxwell were there.
Yeah, that's good, bad, and no news all wrapped up in one. It is no news because Earl, he had written this and made it very clear he was not going to not only be a minicamp, mandatory minicamp, and forfeit $85,000. He's going to forfeit some more dollars in fine money because I don't expect him to be here at training camp either. The bad news is that Frank, unfortunately, has a hamstring. And guess what? If you miss OTAs and you miss time and all of a sudden you try to ramp up, guess what happens? You pull hamstrings. And, you know, the good news is B-Max is back.
Are you going to do any speculating on the
Maybe it was barking. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was barking. Maybe
now,
it wasn't.
Are you reporting that it was barking or speculating?
I am reporting it was barking because he was not participating.
Right. All right. Here's what I will say. At this point, it's all going to be no news with Earl Thomas until something actually happens. I don't expect him around. I don't expect him to ever play for the Seahawks again. The Frank Thomas one, or Frank Thomas, Frank Clark is a little concerning to me. I don't like that he wasn't there for voluntary. I don't like that he's got this hammy thing, and if it's legitimate, fine. But I don't mind speculating a little bit. I think it's worth asking. We've seen enough athletes pull a little, I'm unhappy about my contract, and now my leg hurts type of a move.
Yep.
I really hope that's not the case. I hope he's actually just dealing with a little hammy, because they need him this year. They need him to be locked and loaded, and I hope he's interested in playing his way into a long-term deal. I don't think it's a solid thing yet. I don't think he's a solid bet, but I think he could play himself into it this year, and if so, I'd love to see Frank here for the long term.
And Clayton has said this, and the name is DeMarcus Lawrence. I think that is a tremendous comp for Frank Clark, that physically maybe DeMarcus is a little bit bigger, but they're real, real close. And DeMarcus Lawrence he wanted a deal, he didn't get it, and he used this last season as a springboard to be enfranchised and guaranteed over $15 million.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Mike Trout has hit 30 career home runs against the Mariners, more than any other team.
It is ridiculous. It is bad news. Did I see he has more home runs here at Safeco than Ken Griffey Jr.? It's by a bunch, right? Weren't we talking about that yesterday?
Oh, I think he tied him in first inning with 7. I don't think he would have more. 30.
You sure?
Yeah, I think Griffey had more than 30 in this place. But, yeah, it's over 1,000 ops all time in all those games against the Mariners.
It's absurd.
Yeah, it's just nuts.
Every pitch you throw him, there's a decent chance he's going to hit a
home run.
You
better be above the belt, right?
Trout has 20 career home runs.
Okay. How many does Junior have?
We'll have to pull up Junior.
17? More than that?
I mean, where is
how long did Junior actually play here?
Where is
part
his
of 99 and then
where is his cold zone? Where is Trout at all vulnerable?
Nowhere.
I mean, is it
high? Up
yeah,
high.
I think it is.
High
right?
outside.
Yeah.
You got to get him up high.
Yep. And Leek got him, and then Diaz got him up, and then he came back down
and
away.
The pitch that he hit, was it last night or two nights ago, that was low and outside? I mean, it was a good pitch.
Yeah, it was last night.
He just crushed it.
Arms extended.
That dude is so strong, and I'm, you know, it's a good thing he's taking testosterone.
Griffey has 29.
All right. So when will he pass him?
9 more home runs?
So that on this pace,
tomorrow,
4.5 games.
But no news because Mariners are 2-0, and that's all that really matters.
That's right.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Russell Wilson's latest hobby is flying helicopters. He cracked that kernel of knowledge on us yesterday.
Good news.
He also said that he likes to pick up. He also, the explanation of it too was that he likes to pick up one new thing every year.
Yeah, but does the one new thing have to be so incredibly dangerous?
Well, and he specifically said that he just last week was flying his helicopter around Portland after he had invested in baseball.
Oh my god!
So it's not like he's got very much going on.
I really think that flying helicopter seems dangerous. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Maybe it's the Jewish mother that I had growing up, but I'm not real in, like...
You see way too many 80s action movies of helicopters exploding and falling out of the sky.
No.
I think that helicopters seem incredibly dangerous, and I don't think anybody should be going up in them, let alone Russell Wilson.
Yes, I've been on two, and both times they're pretty lovely trips. One time in Indianapolis after I got traded there, and we toured all these old high schools, and nobody knew who I was. So that was kind of funny with some of the other cheerleaders and other new players. Yes.
I thought they were taking you and Molly around to like show you schools.
Did
you
just
tell Brock here's
Did you just tell them that you had your own radio show?
I did not at that point. And I still don't have one. But the other time was this last summer up in Canada, going up there with West Coast Resorts. And that was just beautiful. So good for Russell. That's good news.
No, thank
you. He needs more on his plate.
Good news, bad news, no news.
North America was selected to host the 2026 World Cup, and Seattle is a candidate to be a host city.
Yeah, this is great news. And the Olympics will come, 2 years before that, 2 years after that? The Olympics are coming back to the States as well.
2028 LA.
Yep, so that is all good news. In Seattle, one of 16 or 24?
24 finalists, and 16 will be picked.
We'll get it. It's too good a facility. It's too passionate a fan base. That's going to be coming to Seattle. That's
the World Cup of Golf coming to Seattle?
No. The World Cup of Soccer, which begins in Russia here very soon.
World Cup of Soccer. Hold on. The U.S. in that?
No.
Oh, they're not in that.
But no. I think if you're the host country, you do get an automatic bid.
Oh, so no wonder they pulled this off. This way they make sure that they actually get in there.
Sponsors exemption.
I just hope the U.S. and Canada are still friends by the time this happens. It doesn't look like we're moving in that direction, so we'll see. All right, that is good news, bad news, no news. Do that every single day at 8:45. By the way, that's great news on the World Cup.
You
I'm just kidding. That's good news.
You,
I love that stuff.
How many times have you clamored for this city?
Bigger Seattle.
Yes, I love it.
Host the draft and host a PGA.
I am just joking. I think it's a great, great thing.
Thank you.
I'm happy for all the soccer fans out there who will get the
Easy
World Cup
on the
back
jokes,
here. That was here, in 1996? Was that the last time it was in the
94?
United States?
You're going to be making
it. Brandi Chastain?
That was women, I think, was 98. Men was 94 or something like that. 94.
Don't be making jokes on my
Diego
show.
Diego Maradona. I know all about
Unless you can pay them off, right? This is my show, and if you're going to make jokes, it better be funny.
I thought it was funny. Whether it's your show or not, I thought it was funny. Anytime soccer guy gets mad, that in and of itself is funny. Scott Service in a half hour, a lot of Mariner conversation coming up. It's Brock and Salk.